The 2014 poll, which they uncovered, by the way, which say that 13%, remember our math using the progressives' own figures, 13% have positive feelings toward ISIS. And based on that, and I think this is very clever, Ryan suggests, rather forcefully, that the vetting process that we're now looking at should not just rely on criminal records and databases, which the FBI has told us are slim to none, and on in-depth interviews and all that crud that somebody who's trained can evade, but it should be ideological in nature, just because the threat is ideological in nature. In other words, he argues, we don't want to have, even if true, a thorough vetting process that ignores these questions and allows somebody who otherwise passes everything with flying colors to come into the country who has a radical outlook. Because once again, this person may not be militarized at the time he's vetted, but if he has a radical outlook, the chances of him militarizing, linking up with existing cells, etc., is extremely high. So one of the things he recommends is to put together a global, comprehensive database of foreign jihadis who have gone to Syria to fight, which does not exist. If you can believe that, folks, it doesn't exist. The second thing he suggests is that the U.S. put in place a national strategy against terrorist travel. In other words, once you have your database of foreign fighters that have gone to Syria or the Middle East from anywhere in the world, including the United States, you can then put into a national strategy not allowing them to travel back into the country, which, by the way, the progressives argue with. Anyway, 1,800 refugees, he writes, have come to the U.S. in the past 2 years, but only a bit, about half, passed the vetting. That makes you wonder what happened to the other 900 of the 1,800 that are here. There is nothing in the vetting process about evaluating the outlook of an applicant to find signs of Islamist sympathies. Remember, an Islamist, we talked about this several weeks ago. Let's make sure we're all on the same page on semantics. A Muslim is somebody of the Muslim faith. An Islamist, whether they are violent or not, is a radical branch of the Muslim faith that believes, to make it easy, in all sorts of different end-of-the-world theories, including the 12th Imam, which we've talked about, and to get there, you have to have Armageddon on Earth. This is kind of where Iran's coming from. This is where ISIS is coming from. And then you have other forms of radical Islam, you know, simply killing apostates, killing infidels, you know. They may not believe in the 12th Imam, but they sure believe in killing you. And none of the vetting process that currently exists, either at the UN particularly, or at the United States, because it's not PC, has this rigorous interview process and search, to the extent there is a database, for people in this population who would otherwise pass vetting, who are at heart, or in reality, Islamists, who should not be allowed into this country. He also says that they should be checked for other forms of extremism, like anti-Semitism, anti-American views, etc. He says an ideology-based screening process would separate Islamists from non-Islamists, as opposed to simply what it does now, or supposedly does now, separates terrorists from non-terrorists. would greatly minimize the chances of a radical who otherwise not might not yet be a terrorist getting through. And here's the one of the most interesting parts of his thought process. And I quote, maximizes the chances of identifying an ally to work with, unquote. I think that's really smart. He goes on to say, it is not in our interest or in the Syrians' interest for an Islamist to take a moderate's place in line. Wow. A voice of reason in this storm of illogic. And I'm going to read you this paragraph because I can't paraphrase it any better than he wrote it. By failing to identify anti-Islamist friends among the Syrian refugees, we are hurting our cause and losing a chance to undermine the Islamist extremist cause. For example, Dr. Zudi Jasser, president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, is a powerful voice against Islamism. He is in the U.S. doing his work because his parents sought refuge in America from the Assad regime. We need fluent Arabic speakers, those who understand that part of the world. We need voices who can speak firsthand about the horrors of ISIS, other Syrian Islamists, and the Iran-backed Assad dictatorship. We need Muslims who are on the lookout for extremism and will not hesitate to report it and keep tabs on it. These are the roles that Syrian refugees who oppose Islamism can help fill. You know, I'm pretty impressed with this guy. And I think that this is the tact that ought to be taken. Because, yes, we have many allies in the Muslim population coming this way. And we have many enemies in the Muslim population coming this way. And our job is to separate them using a vetting process and making sure the UN isn't pulling its nonsense. Make sure the bad guys don't get in. Welcome the good guys and recruit them to help us defeat the bad guys here and elsewhere around the world. Very, very... well thought out. So make sure you visit clarionproject.org, and there are a number of other great articles on there, too. My producer's gesturing at me, so we're at 48 minutes. Wow. Okay, I got 7 minutes to wrap up here, folks. And I want to tell you a little something. I'm not a big boycott guy. I'm kind of live, let live. Everybody gets to make their decisions. Just don't force your decision on me type guy. But I learned some really interesting stuff about Starbucks, and the article will be posted, I believe, with this week's show. We might have posted it last week also. Did you know that Starbucks has thousands of stores in various Muslim countries, in Palestinian areas, throughout the Muslim world? Now, many Muslims don't drink coffee, but that's besides the point. Obviously, if Starbucks is there and they have thousands of stores, it's, you know, there's a profit. Do you know what Middle Eastern country Starbucks has not a single store? Israel. And it's not because Israel said, we don't like Starbucks, we don't allow Starbucks. That's because Starbucks will not put a store in Israel. And you'll see another story, I believe, also posted today. It might be in a domestic. About these cups that Starbucks has come out with for Christmas. Or the holidays, as they call it. May I suggest you read those stories, you do your own research, and I'm going to strongly suggest, because I took this step 2 weeks ago upon learning this rather amazing information, I'd find another coffee shop. I think it's time to boycott old Starbucks. Because obviously Starbucks shall we say, is not sympathetic to Jews, is sympathetic to Muslim populations, and is anti-faith and anti-family. Take a look at their stuff. Don't take it from me. Read their own stuff. Do some research. And then support your local coffee shop and not Starbucks. Barack Obama Barack Obama has a really interesting MO whenever he gets on his high horse, which is often, and his ideological memory lapse machine. What he does is he, and this is the nudge theory by one of his czars, we've talked about this in previous shows, you keep moving people inch by inch toward where you want them to be, and suddenly they'll find themselves too far in to retreat. That's what he did with Obamacare. The provisions in Obamacare, which would have killed it with public opinion, the courts, you name it, he illegally deferred, delayed, moved back years, etc. And now Obamacare has enough of a hold, despite all its huge problems, where it has become difficult as a metastasized cancer to exercise. He did the same thing. He did the same thing in Syria. Assad must go, the red line, etc., etc. And that led to the refugee crisis. And we're now so far into it where he has moved us incrementally. Think about all the little things he's done over about 4 years. The things he hasn't done that could have stopped this whole mess, and the things that he has done, which has accelerated the whole mess, to arrive at this point where you have the refugees. Which any fool, you don't have to be in the government, in foreign services, have a diplomatic or political science degree, you don't have to know anything. You know what the outcome was going to be. And now it's a crisis, and he's using the crisis to further more ideology here in the United States by this infiltration of improperly or incompletely vetted Muslim populations from the Middle East and from certain parts of Africa. Not a worry, not a care about identifying Muslims who are our friends and who would be terrific additions to this country and welcome allies in the war on terror, which words he's abolished, by the way. There is no more war on terror. From our enemies, those 26 guys, using the progressives' own math, that would slip through the current net and cause murder and mayhem, as a similar number did in Paris just a week ago. He's done the same thing with immigration. He makes his illegal proclamations. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, flood the borders based on them. Millions of others get green cards. They get this, they get that, they get that. Two courts have now struck it down. It's on its way to the Supreme Court. And you know what? Whatever the Supreme Court rules, folks, it is now so far entrenched. It is so far now stuck up, wherever you would like to say. It is so far ingrained, the machinery is so large and inexorable that if the Supreme Court rules it illegal, it'll be very difficult to put back in the genie, to put the genie back in the bottle. This is what he does. And this is what he's doing with the refugee matter. It's also what he's doing with ISIS. He could have destroyed ISIS. He let ISIS grow and grow and grow. He let them cement their positions. They now own territory they can train in with relative safety. And we're now stuck. A problem, a cancer that could have been eradicated at one cell 3 years ago, that was armed by us under Obama 4 and 5 years ago and continuing, is now this major contagion, which is tough to put out. I've long said his sympathies are with them, not us. And I think in a way you're seeing it happening with Russia. He allows Russia to take Ukraine. First of all, he has the reset with Russia with Hillary Clinton. I mean, she is every bit as bad as Barack Obama. And as every bit detrimental to this country. So they have the Russian reset. We know how that worked. Then Russia takes Crimea. We don't do anything. You know how that worked. Then Russia has the thing in Georgia. We do nothing. Actually, it was Georgia, then Ukraine. And we do nothing. Then Russia tells us to get out of airspace over Syria. And we do so without even a whimper. Then we have Sop Kerry running around talking about a de-escalation, a de-conflict agreement. I mean, what? A de-conflict agreement? Maybe as these two fighter jets, one from Russia, one from America, pass each other at a combined speed of 3,600 miles per hour, they can hold the de-conflict agreement up in their cockpit glass for the two of them to read from each other's planes. What a wonderful idea. Russia was building up his forces in Syria for far longer than the last 2 months. He did nothing. Russia is flexing its muscles in the Arctic right off the Alaskan coast. He did nothing. And pretty soon, Russia is going to control. Russia has two end games, folks. I want you to understand this. Okay? Oop, I'm going to be slightly over. We'll have to tell the stations. Thank you, producer. Russia has two endgames. Putin is smart. Like him, not like him, whatever. He's KGB. He's KG. KG? KGB? We know two things about Putin. Three things. He's smart and tough. That's number one. Number two, he plays long-term chess. And number three, he wants to destroy NATO. He regards Obama as a fool. In fact, he called them a child after their meeting. He said it twice. He's a child. He's a child. Look it up. The article is posted. After their 20-minute photo op meeting, which Valerie Jarrett insisted they have at the G20, and he thinks the demise of the Russian Empire, the Soviet Union, was the greatest political calamity, blah, 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 for 100 years. So we know that he has two goals. And as part of those goals, there are sub-goals. Take down the dollar, take down America, etc. He wants to destroy NATO. And he wants to expand the Soviet Union, expand Russia back into the glory days of the Soviet Union, which means he has to take back the Baltic states, folks. Poland, Czechoslovakia, all those states which were under the Soviet Union. The problem is the Baltic states are part of NATO. And as such are supposed to be protected, although obviously they aren't. Just watch what Obama did in taking out the nuclear missile defense deal with, like, the first day he got in office. They're supposed to be protected by NATO. under Article 5, an attack on one nation is an attack on all. France has now been attacked in this terror attack. The Americans won't support France other than giving them intelligence on coordinates that they've had for a year but haven't acted on. So France is teaming up with Russia. The same with Italy. The same with the Gulf states. Now, you have these Western countries petrified of ISIS and ISIS terror, i.e. the French attack, the Belgian alert, as I'm dictating this, etc., etc., etc. You have America doing nothing, and you have Russia flying 25 bomber in formation bombing missions, pretty much carpet bombing, which, by the way, is an impressive feat. 25 sophisticated fighter bombers at one time is a big deal in modern warfare. Now, they only have 67 backfire bombers, not like they have hundreds. But to get 25 of them, launch them secretly, and continue these carpet bombing campaigns against our allies and against ISIS is still a feat, and it sends a message. Now, as Russia does more and more, and America does less and less, and the other countries therefore depend on Russia more and more, and as some of the other countries are NATO countries, what do you think is going to happen? And I'm sure you're going to see it before Barack Obama leaves office, because that's their window. What do you think is going to happen when Russia starts pushing the Baltic states around? And France is left with a choice in France's mind, I'm just taking them for example, of suffering continuous terror attacks and not being able to take on ISIS alone, or coming to the aid, as Article 5 demands, it's the glue of NATO, to the aid of Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Poland, whatever the Baltic states Putin wants to pick on. You think France is going to say, well, the hell with taking on ISIS and the hell with terror at home, we're going to stand by our treaty with Poland? No, they aren't. And NATO is going to come down. Putin has cleverly given an either or ultimatum down the road. So, at the same time, if everything that he has in motion works, and he's allied with Iran, has his fingers in Iraq, his fingers in Syria, he's a predominant military power in the Middle East, and therefore are the shipping lanes for oil, Vladimir Putin will control 60% of the world's energy supply, which, by the way, is also about 90% of Europe's energy supply, which is more pressure on NATO. So that is what I think Mr. Putin has planned. I think that Barack Obama, being brilliant, understands that. And I think that Barack Obama and crew are doing the nudge thing, allowing things to move along, nudge by nudge by nudge, until finally we wake up one day and Putin indeed has dismantled NATO, moved into the Baltic states, and controls 60% of the world's oil. And then it's too late. Anyway, who am I to know? I'm just a little old rancher boy in Wyoming. But it is something to think about. Visit Dabiq. Visit clarionproject.org. Have a great week. Stay safe. And have a wonderful, by the way, Thanksgiving. We will not talk again until right after Thanksgiving. So have a terrific day. Give thanks for all those great things that there are to give thanks for. Enjoy your family, your friends, and whatever pastimes you have planned. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio.